Hello, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at WTBR FM 89.7 Pittsfield. Today we're going to continue with Time and the Gods by Laura Dunsany. Today's story is called In the Land of Time. Thus Carnith, king of Alatta, spake to his eldest son, I bequeath to thee my city of Zoon, with its golden eaves, whereunder hum the bees. And I bequeath to thee also the land of Alatta, and all such other lands as thou art worthy to possess, for my three strong armies which I leave thee may well take Zindara, and overrun Istan, and drive back Onin from his frontier, and leaguer the walls of Yan, and beyond that spread conquest over the lesser lands of Hibith, Ebnon, and Karida. Only lead not thine armies against Zinar, nor ever cross the Ides. Thereat, in the city of Zoon, in the land of Alatta, under his golden eaves, died King Carnith, and his soul went whither had gone the souls of his sires, the elder kings, and the souls of their slaves. Then Carnith Zo, the new king, took the iron crown of Alatta, and afterwards went down to the plains that encircle Zoon, and found his three strong armies clamoring to be led against Zinar over the river Ides. But the new king came back from his armies, and all one night in the great palace, alone with his iron crown, pondered long upon war. And a little before dawn, he saw dimly through his palace window, facing east over the city of Zoon and across the fields of Alatta, to far off where a valley opened on Istan. There, as he pondered, he saw the smoke arising tall and straight over small houses in the plain and the fields where the sheep fed. Later the sun rose shining over Alatta as it shone over Istan, and there arose a stir about the houses both in Alatta and Istan. And roosters crowed in the city, and men went out into the fields among the bleeding sheep. And the king wondered if men did otherwise in Istan. And men and women met as they went out to work, and the sound of laughter arose from streets and fields. The king's eyes gazed into the distance towards Istan, and still the smoke went upward, tall and straight from the small houses. And the sun rose higher that shone upon Alatta and Istan, causing the flowers to open wide in each, and the birds to sing, and the voices of men and women to arise. And in the marketplace of Zoon, caravans were astir that set out to carry merchandise to Istan, and afterwards passed camels coming to Alatta with many tinkling bells. All this the king saw as he pondered much, who had not pondered before. Westward, the Agnid Mountains frowned in the distance, guarding the river Ides. Behind them, the fierce people of Zinar lived in a bleak land. Later, the king, going abroad through his new kingdom, came on the temple of the gods of old. There he found the roof shattered and the marble columns broken, and tall weeds met together in the inner shrine, and the gods of old, bereft of worship or sacrifice, neglected and forgotten. And the king asked of his counselors who it was that had overturned this temple of the gods, or caused the gods themselves to be thus forsaken. And they answered him, Time has done this. Next the king came upon a man bent and crippled, whose face was furrowed and worn. And the king, having seen no such sight within the court of his father, said to the man, Who hath done this thing to you? And the old man answered, Time hath ruthlessly done it. But the king and his counselors went on, and next they came upon a body of men carrying among them a hearse. And the king asked his counselors closely concerning death, for these things had not before been expounded to the king. And the oldest of the counselors answered, "Death, O king, is a gift sent by the gods, by the hand of their servant Time, and some receive it gladly, and some are forced reluctantly to take it, and before others it is suddenly flung in the middle of the day. And with this gift that Time hath brought him from the gods, a man must go forth into the dark to possess no other thing for so long as the gods are willing." But the king went back to his palace and gathered the greatest of his prophets and his counselors and asked them more particularly concerning Time. And they told the king how that Time was a great figure standing like a tall shadow in the dusk or striding unseen across the world, and how that he was the slave of the gods and did their bidding, but ever chose new masters, and how all the former masters of Time were dead and their shrines forgotten. And one said, "I have seen him once when I went down to play again in the garden of my childhood because of certain memories. And it was towards evening, and the light was pale, and I saw Time standing over the little gate, pale like the light. And he stood between me and that garden, and had stolen my memories because he was mightier than I." And another said, "I too have seen the enemy of my house, for I saw him when he strode over the fields that I knew well, and led a stranger by the hand to place him in my home to sit where my forefathers sat. And I saw him afterwards walk thrice round the house, and stoop and gather up the glamour from the lawns, and brush aside the tall poppies in the garden, and spread weeds in his pathway where he strode through the remembered nooks." And another said, "He went one day into the desert, and brought up life out of the waste places, and made it cry bitterly, and covered it with the desert again." And another said, "I too saw him once seated in the garden of a child tearing the flowers, and afterwards he went away through many woodlands, and stooped down as he went, and picked the leaves one by one from the trees." And another said, "I saw him once by moonlight, standing tall and black amidst the ruins of a shrine in the old kingdom of Amarna, doing a deed by night. And he wore a look on his face, such as murderers wear, as he busied himself to cover over something with weeds and dust. Thereafter, in Amarna, the people of that old kingdom missed their god, in whose shrine I saw Time crouching in the night, and they have not since beheld him." And all the while from the distance of the city's edge rose a hum from the three armies of the king, clamoring to be led against Zinar. Thereat the king went down to his three armies, and speaking to their chiefs said, "I will not go down clad with murder to be king over other lands. I have seen the same morning arising on Istan that also gladdened Alatta, and I've heard peace lowing among the flowers. I will not desolate homes to rule over an orphaned land and a land widowed. But I will lead you against the pledged enemy of Alatta, who shall crumble the towers of Zun, and hath gone far to overthrow our gods. He is the foe of Zindara and Istan, and many citadeled Yan, Hibith, and Iban may not overcome him, nor Karida be safe against him among her bleakest mountains. He is a foe mightier than Zinar, with frontiers stronger than Ides. He leers at all the peoples of the earth, and mocks their gods, and covets their builded cities. Therefore we will go forth and conquer Time, and save the gods of Alatta from his clutch, and coming back victorious, shall find that death is gone, and age and illness departed. And here we shall live forever by the golden eaves of Zun, while the bees hum among unrusted gables and never crumbling towers. There shall be neither fading nor forgetting, nor ever dying nor sorrow, when we shall have freed the people and pleasant fields of the earth from an inexorable time. And the army swore that they would follow the king to save the world and the gods. So the next day the king set forth with his three armies and crossed many rivers and marched through many lands. And wherever they went, they asked for news of time. And the first day they met a woman with her face furrowed and lined, who told them that she had been beautiful and that time had smitten her in the face with his five claws. Many an old man they met as they marched in search of time. All had seen him, but none could tell them more, except that some said he went that way and pointed to a ruined tower or to an old and broken tree. And day after day and month by month, the king pushed on with his armies, hoping to come at last on time. Sometimes they encamped at night near palaces of beautiful design, or beside gardens of flowers, hoping to find their enemy when he came to desecrate in the dark. Sometimes they came on cobwebs, sometimes on rusted chains and houses with broken roofs or crumbling walls. Then the armies would push on apace, thinking that they were closer upon the track of time. As the weeks passed by, and weeks grew to months, and always they heard reports and rumors of time, but never found him, the armies grew weary of the great march. But the king pushed on, and would let none turn back, saying always that the enemy was near at hand. Month in, month out, the king led on his now unwilling armies, till at last they had marched for close upon a year, and came to the village of Astarma, very far to the north. There many of the king's weary soldiers deserted from his armies, and settled down in Astarma, and married Astarmian girls. By these soldiers we have the march of the armies clearly chronicled to the time when they came to Astarma, having been nigh a year upon the march. And the army left that village, and the children cheered them as they went up the street, and 5 miles distant they passed over a ridge of hills and out of sight. Beyond this, less is known. But the rest of this chronicle is gathered from the tales that the veterans of the king's armies used to tell in the evenings about the fires in Zun, and remembered afterwards by the men of Zinar. It is mostly credited in these days that such of the king's armies as went on past Astarma came at last, it is not known after how long a time, over a crest of a slope where the whole earth slanted green to the north. Below it lay green fields, and beyond them moaned the sea with never shore nor island so far as the eye could reach. Among the green fields lay a village, and on this village the eyes of the king and his armies were turned as they came down the slope. It lay beneath them, grave with seared antiquity, with old-world gables stained and bent by the lapse of frequent years, with all its chimneys awry. Its roofs were tiled with antique stones covered over deep with moss. Each little window looked with a myriad strange cut panes on the gardens, shaped with quaint devices and overrun with weeds. On rusted hinges the doors swung to and fro, and were fashioned of planks of immemorial oak, with black knots gaping from their sockets. Against it all there beat the thistledown. About it clambered the ivy or swayed the weeds. Tall and straight out of the twisted chimneys arose blue columns of smoke, and blades of grass peeped upward between the huge cobbles of the unmolested street. Between the gardens and the cobbled streets stood hedges higher than a horseman might look, of stalwart thorn, and upward through it clambered the Kenvalulus to peer into the garden from the top. Before each house there was cut a gap in the hedge. and in it swung a wicket gate of timber soft with the rain and years, and green like the moss. Over all of it there brooded age, and the full hush of things bygone and forgotten. Upon this derelict that the years had cast up out of antiquity, the king and his armies gazed long. Then, on the hill slope, the king made his armies halt, and went down alone with one of his chiefs into the village. Presently there was a stir in one of the houses, and a bat flew out of the door into the daylight, and three mice came running out of the doorway down the step. An old stone cracked in two and held together by moss, and there followed an old man bending on a stick with a white beard coming to the ground, wearing clothes that were glossed with use, and presently there came others out of the other houses, all of them as old and all hobbling on sticks. These were the oldest people that the king had ever beheld, and he asked them the name of the village and who they were. And one of them answered, "This is the city of the aged, in the territory of time." And the king said, "Is time then here?" And one of the old men pointed to a great castle standing on a steep hill and said, "Therein dwells time, and we are his people." And they all looked curiously at King Carnath So. And the eldest of the villagers spoke again, and said, "Whence do you come, you that are so young?" And Carnath So told him how he had come to conquer time, to save the world and the gods, and asked them whence they came. And the villagers said, "We are older than always, and know not whence we came. But we are the people of time, and here from the edge of everything, he sends out his hours to assail the world, and you may never conquer time." But the king went back to his armies and pointed toward the castle on the hill and told them that at last they had found the enemy of the earth. And they that were older than always went back slowly into their houses with the creaking of olden doors. And there they went across the fields and past the village. From one of his towers, Time eyed them all the while, and in battle order they closed in on the steep hill as Time sat still in his great tower and watched. But as the feet of the foremost touched the edge of the hill, Time hurled 5 years against them, and the years passed over their heads, and the army still came on, an army of older men. But the slope seemed steeper to the king, and to every man in his army, and they breathed more heavily. And Time summoned up more years, and one by one he hurled them at Carnath So and all his men. And the knees of the army stiffened, and their beards grew and turned gray, and the hours and days and the months went singing over their heads, and their hair turned whiter and whiter. And the conquering hours bore down, and the years rushed on and swept the youth of that army clear away, till they came face to face under the walls of the castle of time with a mass of howling years, and found the top of the slope too steep for aged men. Slowly and painfully, harassed with agues and chills, the king rallied his aged army that tottered down the slope. Slowly the king led back his warriors, over whose heads had shrieked the triumphant years. Year in, year out, they straggled southwards, always toward Zoon. They came, with rust upon their spears, and lawn beards flowing, again into Astarma, and none knew them there. They passed again by towns and villages where once they had inquired curiously concerning time. And none knew them there either. They came again to the palaces and gardens where they had waited for time in the night, and found that time had been there. And all the while they set a hope before them that they should come on Zoon again, and see its golden eaves. And no one knew that unperceived behind them, there lurked and followed the gaunt figure of time, cutting off stragglers one by one, and overwhelming them with his hours. Only men were missed from the army every day, and fewer grew the veterans of Carnath So. But at last, after many a month, one night as they marched in the dusk before the morning, dawn suddenly ascending shone on the eaves of Zoon, and a great cry ran through the army. Alata! Alata! But drawing nearer, they found that the gates were rusted, and weeds grew tall along the outer walls. Many a roof had fallen, gables were blackened and bent, and the golden eaves shone not as heretofore. And the soldiers entering the city, expecting to find their sisters and sweethearts of a few years ago, saw only old women wrinkled with great age and knew not who they were. Suddenly, someone said, "He has been here, too." And then they knew that while they searched for time, time had gone forth against their city and leaguered it with the years, and had taken it while they were far away and enslaved their women and children with the yoke of age. So all that remained for the three armies of Carnath So settled in the conquered city. And presently the men of Zinar crossed over the river Ides, and easily conquering an army of aged men, took all Alata for themselves, and their kings reigned thereafter in the city of Zoon. And sometimes the men of Zinar listened to the strange tales that the old Alatans told of the years when they made battle against time. Such of these tales as of the men of Zinar remembered, they afterwards set forth. And this is all that may be told of those adventurous armies that went to war with time to save the world and the gods, and were overwhelmed by the hours and the years. Well, that was interesting. Just when we thought a king was going to be reasonable and peaceful, he decides to, in his hubris, try to conquer time itself. Well, we all know how these kinds of stories end, but it's always interesting to see how they get there. We do have one more story today, but first, a message from our sponsor.
Whoa, like, what exactly is happening here?
89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
We all know WTBR is great to listen to on 89.7 FM, but did you know that you can listen to WTBR just about anywhere? We've got a web stream and it's easy to use. Go to WTBRFM.com on your computer and click play. You can use the TuneIn app on your smartphone and connect it to your car's sound system. Or you can use your smart speaker. Just say, "Alexa, play WTBRFM," and there's your community radio station. WTBR, for the love of radio.
Greetings, this is John Pollock, host of The Jazz Train, which comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 11:30. The Jazz Train generally features music recorded on a particular calendar date in years past and provides relevant commentary and discographical details. So why not join me for a ride on the Jazz Train for a weekly musical adventure? Coming to you on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
All right, for those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon reading Time and the Gods by Laura Dunsany on Page Turners. This next story is called The Relenting of Sarnadak. The lame boy Sarnadak tended sheep on a hill to the southward of the city. Sarnadak was a dwarf and greatly derided in the city. For the woman said, "It is very funny that Sarnadak is a dwarf." And they would point their fingers at him, saying, "This is Sarnadak. He is a dwarf. Also, he is very lame." Once the doors of all the temples in the world swung open to the morning, and Sarnadak, with his sheep upon the hill, saw strange figures going down the white road, always southwards. All the morning he saw the dust rising above the strange figures, and always they went southwards, right as far as the rim of the Nidoon Hills, where the white road could be seen no more. And the figures stooped and seemed to be larger than men. But all men seemed very large to Sarnadak, and he could not see clearly through the dust. And Sarnadak shouted to them as he hailed all people that passed down the long white road, and none of the figures looked to left or right, and none of them turned to answer Sarnadak. But then few people ever answered him, because he was lame and a small dwarf. Still, the figures went striding swiftly, stooping forward through the dust, till at last Sarnadak came running down his hill to watch them closer. As he came to the white road, the last of the figures passed him, and Sarnadak ran limping behind him down the road. For Sarnadak was weary of the city wherein all derided him, and when he saw these figures all hurrying away, he thought that they went perhaps to some other city beyond the hills, over which the sun shone brighter, or where there was more food, for he was poor. Even, perhaps, where people had not the custom of laughing at Sarnadak. So this procession of figures that stooped and seemed larger than men went southward and down the road, and a lame dwarf hobbled behind them. Kamazan, now called the City of the Lost Temples, lies southward of the Nidoon Hills. This is the story of Pompeides, now chief prophet of the only temple in the world, and greatest of all the prophets that have been. On the slopes of Nidoon I was seated once above Kamazan. There I saw figures in the morning striding through much dust along the road that leads across the world. Striding up the hill, they came towards me, not with the gait of men. And soon the first one came to the crest of the hill, where the road dips to find the plains again, where lies Kamazan. And now I swear by all the gods that are gone that this thing happened as I shall say it, and was surely so. When those that came striding up the hill came to its summit, they took not the road that goes down into the plains, nor trod the dust any longer, but went straight on and upwards, striding as they strode before, as though the hill had not ended nor the road dipped. And they strode as though they trod no yielding substance, yet they stepped upwards through the air. This the gods did, for they were not born men who strode that day so strangely away from earth. But I, when I saw this thing, when already three had passed me, leaving earth, cried out before the fourth, "Gods of my childhood, guardians of little homes, whither are ye going, leaving the round earth to swim alone and forgotten in so great a waste of sky?" And one answered, "Heresy apace shoots her fierce glare over the world, and men's faith grows dim, and the gods go. Men shall make iron gods and gods of steel when the wind and the ivy meet within the shrines of the temples of the gods of old." And I left that place as a man leaves fire by night, and going plainwards down the white road that the gods spurned, cried out to all that I passed to follow me. And so crying came to the city's gates, and there I shouted to all near the gates, "From yonder hilltop, the gods are leaving earth." Then I gathered many, and we all hastened to the hill to pray the gods to tarry, and there we cried out to the last of the departing gods, "Gods of old prophecy and of men's hopes, leave not the earth, and all our worship shall hum about your ears as never it hath before, and oft the sacrifice shall squeal upon your altars. And I said, Gods of still evenings and of quiet nights, go not from earth, and leave not ye carven shrines, and all men shall worship you still. For between us and yonder still blue spaces oft roam the thunder and the storms. There in his hiding lurks the dark eclipse, and there are stored all snows and hails and lightnings that shall vex the earth for a million years. Gods of our hopes, how shall men's prayers, crying from empty shrines, pass through such terrible spaces? How shall they ever fare above the thunder and many storms to whatever place the gods may go in that blue waste beyond? But the gods bent straight forward and trampled through the sky, and looked not to the right, nor left, nor downwards, nor ever heeded my prayer. And one cried out, hoping yet to stay the gods, though nearly all were gone, saying, O gods, rob not the earth of the dim hush that hangs round all your temples. Bereave not all the world of old romance. Take not the glamour from the moonlight, nor tear the wonder out of the white mists in every land. For, O ye gods of the childhood of the world, when you have left the earth, you shall have taken the mystery from the sea and all its glory from antiquity, and you shall have wrenched out hope from the dim future. There shall be no strange cries at nighttime half understood, nor songs in the twilight, and the whole of the wonder shall have died with last year's flowers in little gardens or hill slopes leaning south. For with the gods must go the enchantment of the plains and all the magic of dark woods, and something shall be lacking from the quiet of early dawn. For it would scarce befit the gods to leave the earth and not take with them that which they have given it. Out beyond the still blue spaces, ye will need the holiness of sunset for yourselves, and little sacred memories, and the thrill that is in stories told by firesides long ago. One strain of music, one song, one line of poetry, and one kiss, and a memory of one pool with rushes, and each one the best, shall the gods take to whom the best belongs when the gods go. Sing a lamentation, people of Kamazan. Sing a lamentation for all the children of earth at the feet of the departing gods. Sing a lamentation for the children of earth who must now carry their prayers to empty shrines, and around empty shrines must rest at last. Then, when our prayers were ended and our tears shed, we beheld the last and smallest of the gods halted upon the hilltop. Twice he called to them with a cry somewhat like the cry wherewith our shepherds hail their brethren, and long gazed after them, and then deigned to look no longer and to tarry upon earth and turn his eyes on men. Then a great shout went up when we saw that our hopes were saved, and that there was still on earth a haven for our prayers. Smaller than men now seemed the figures that had loomed so big, as one behind the other, far over our heads, they still strode upwards. But the small god that had pitied the world came with us down the hill, still deigning to tread the road, though strangely not as men tread, and into Kamazan. There we housed him in the palace of the king, for that was before the building of the temple of gold. And the king made sacrifice before him with his own hands, and he that had pitied the world did eat the flesh of the sacrifice. And the book of the knowledge of the gods in Kamazan tells how the small god that pitied the world told his prophets that his name was Sarnadak, and that he herded sheep, and that therefore he is called the shepherd god, and sheep are sacrificed upon his altars thrice a day. And the north, east, west, and the south are the four hurdles of Sarnadak, and the white clouds are his sheep. And the book of the knowledge of the gods tells further how the day on which Pompades found the gods shall be kept forever as a fast until the evening, and called the fast of the departing, but in the evening shall a feast be held, which is named the Feast of the Relenting. For on that evening Sarnadak pitied the whole world and tarried. And the people of Kamazan all prayed to Sarnadak and dreamed their dreams and hoped their hopes, because their temple was not empty. Whether the gods that are departed to be greater than Sarnadak, none know in Kamazan. But some believe that in their azure windows they have set lights that lost prayer swarming upwards may come to them like moths, and at last find haven and light far up above the evening and the stillness where sit the gods. But Sarnadak wondered at the strange figures, at the people of Kamazan, and at the palace of the king and the customs of the prophets, but wondered not more greatly at aught in Kamazan than he had wondered at the city which he had left. For Sarnadak, who had not known why men were unkind to him, thought he had found at last the land for which the gods had let him hope, where men should have the custom of being kind to Sarnadak. That was a surprisingly nice story for this collection that ended with this little shepherd being mistaken for a god and just living life as a god, like, because they thought he was the last god. So that's pretty nice. Well, that's all the time we have today, and I will enjoy reading more of these stories to you next time. This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners. I had a great time reading to you, and I hope you had a great time listening.